crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. We're coming to you today from Jerusalem, Israel. Thank you very much for joining us. If you listen to this program for any length of time, you know that we have a very unique perspective on viewing current events, world news. We, of course, look through the lens of Bible prophecy to show us how the future will transpire, future events will transpire. And this is just so necessary, especially when things are very confusing. And by very confusing, I think case in point, you would have to look at Syria right now with so many parties involved. And now there's just been another announcement that is going to bring a greater level of uncertainty to events in Syria. That is, of course, Donald Trump, Mr. Donald Trump's decision to remove United States forces from that arena. Today, we're going to talk about that decision and the effect that it will have and is having already in the region, the nations that are involved there in the fight against Islamic State and that are there in Syria for other reasons as well. And then we'll look forward a little bit to possibly see what the other nations that are a part of the United States mission in Syria right now, what they're going to do. There are other nations, particularly European nations, with forces dedicated to supporting the United States mission to destroy Islamic State. And all of them have come out and said, the Islamic State isn't defeated in Syria and we still need to be there. What are those nations going to do without the leadership of the United States? There's some big questions, especially questions that are really besetting European leaders right now as they have to decide what to do with their forces. And so we're going to look at both of those questions today. But I'll set it up by going back to the decision that was made on Wednesday by Mr. Trump to pull out his forces. Here is Mr. Trump on Wednesday.
We've been fighting for a long time in Syria. I've been president for almost 2 years, and we've really stepped it up, and we have won against ISIS. We've beaten them, and we've beaten them badly. We've taken back the land, and now it's time for our troops to come back home. I get very saddened when I have to write letters or call parents or wives or husbands of soldiers who have been killed fighting for our country. It's a great honor. We cherish them. But it's heartbreaking. There's no question about it. It's heartbreaking. Now we've won. It's time to come back. They're getting ready. You're going to see them soon. These are great American heroes. These are great heroes of the world because they fought for us, but they've killed ISIS, who hurts the world. And we're proud to have done it. And I'll tell you, they're up there looking down on us. And there is nobody happier or more proud of their families to put them in a position where they've done such good for so many people. So our boys, our young women, our men, they're all coming back, and they're coming back now. We won, and that's the way we want it, and that's the way they want it.
So that was Mr. Trump's statement that really did catch so many in the world by surprise. It caught a lot of the members of the anti-ISIS coalition by surprise as well, to hear that the leading nation is going to withdraw. Those with the most soldiers on the ground as part of that force are going to withdraw. A couple of points about that statement as far as how factual it is. Yes, Islamic State has been largely defeated inside Syria. It has lost a lot of its territory, but it still definitely does exist. It's still killing people. Every week you have reports of Islamic State fighters killing others inside Syria. And so it hasn't been defeated wholeheartedly or completely. And even those other nations, France, Germany, although they don't have boots on the ground, Germany is supporting in other ways. But France especially, they've come out and said, as we'll get to, that they're not withdrawing because the fight against Islamic State goes on. Britain has said the same thing. But it's interesting that he did preface this whole discussion about bringing the troops home when this contingent only exists of just over 2,000 men. It's not many when you consider United States foreign deployments. It's actually one of the smallest. And in terms of being, if you wanted to bring troops home to their families, those that were in danger of dying. Syria is one of the most safe places, if I could put it that way, as far as troop U.S. casualties go abroad. In the past 2 years, there's only been 5 U.S. servicemen that were killed. Of course, that's 5 too many. I'm not saying that. But nevertheless, when he talks about writing letters to these families or to those that are dead through the Syrian fight that are looking down, being very happy that we're won, we're coming home, it's good to remember that there were just 5 people that were killed in that. And 3 of those weren't even killed in battle. They were killed by mistakes and other things. And so it's just 2 that were actually killed by enemy forces inside Syria. So that's not many. And if you even ask a lot of the, well, at least reports are coming out that if you ask some of the servicemen and commanders that are there in Syria, they were embedded and working with Kurdish forces, and they had established quite the relationship with the Kurds. The Kurds acted as, continue to act as the main ground forces that are aligned with the United States inside Syria that fight against the Islamic State. They, American forces, while we do have boots, they do have boots on the ground, they're not that actively involved in the fight against ISIS. They're mainly involved in intelligence. They're mainly involved in training the other Kurdish forces to be those ground forces. In terms of blood, the lives that have actually lost in the fight against ISIS in Syria, they were mainly Kurdish in terms of the alliance that the United States is supporting. And so the Kurds now, as we'll get to, they are very upset by this decision. They weren't really talked to about it. But not just the Kurds, but also the American servicemen. The American servicemen that are fighting in Syria, that have fought alongside these Kurdish forces, that have built up relationships with them, that want to see the Kurds succeed, finally, to get their own state. The 20 million of them that exist right now in the Middle East, there in the borders of Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and Syria, right there, all those nations come together. That's where the Kurds live. There's about 20 million of them, 20 million plus. That's the population of Australia. And yet they don't have a nation. There's 2 million Kurds that live in Syria, north and northeastern Syria, and they were hopeful by the end of this that there might be some type of a statehood deal where they could reign over themselves instead of being perpetually fighting, having to fight against the Syrians or the Iraqi government or the Iranians or the Turks. They wanted a safe haven somewhere in the Middle East, and that's why the Kurds support Israel so much. They see Israel as this beacon of hope for them, that they might get a state as well, since they've been such an oppressed people for so long. And again, there's 20 plus million of them. Only 2 of those 2 million inside Syria. But nevertheless, it's interesting if you talk to those people actually involved on the ground, the commanders, CENTCOM commander, Mr. Votel, he was there inside Syria in the past couple of months, and he's talked about how necessary the mission was, and apparently he was very upset by this, because he's got to go and tell those troops that are there on the ground, that have been fighting alongside the Kurds, that have been really believing in the mission there inside Syria, that, no, you're coming home. You're coming home, and there, while they can be happy about the successes against the Islamic State, everybody knew, apart from the president, it seems, that it was more than the Islamic State, this mission inside Syria. It was more than just fighting against the jihadis. It was putting American troops in a very important region in the world to give them a say in how things go forward in the Middle East. It was there. It was a very big sign to the ally of Israel that we're here to support you. We only have 2,000 troops. That's not many, but we're having a very important function. One of the main things alongside supporting the Kurds that the United States forces were doing, and they currently are, there was a report, I think, earlier today out of eastern Syria with one of the Kurdish groups that works with U.S. forces that the U.S. forces have not withdrawn just yet. They're still there. And the U.S. forces, they occupy this really important, strategically important base, the El Tanf base. It's located right where northeastern Jordan and southeastern Syria and Iraq meet. So right in this border territory. It's also on the main road that basically connects Damascus in Syria all the way there in the western Syria to Baghdad and other parts of Iraq. And so this is the main roadway, the main highway. And right there in the middle of that, you had this U.S. base. And around that U.S. base, you had a demilitarized zone, a 55-kilometer stretch in which the U.S. forces said, nobody comes into this area or we will fire on you. And that happened numerous times. It happened numerous times with the Iranians, Shiite proxies of the Iranians coming close into this territory, flying drones into the territory just to see if the United States would act. And they did. Shot them out of the sky. They ensured that this was a deconfliction zone, an area where no foreign forces could come that weren't aligned with the United States. It was also a safe haven to 50,000 people. 50,000 refugees that are there right now that don't know what's going to happen when the United States decides to leave because they've been on the run. Mostly on the run from Islamic State, on the run from Iranian-backed Shiites and the Syrian regime. What's going to happen to them? But even more necessary than that in terms of Middle East chess pieces, I guess, is the fact that this base was on the roadway that was that Iran wants to use to access the Mediterranean from its own territory inside Iran. It wants to, we've written about this a lot, and this is just a well-known strategic foreign policy goal of the Iranians to control territory and freedom of movement for its troops across Iran, Iraq, Syria, and into Lebanon. And this base largely prevented that. This American base prevented that. And American forces stationed there prevented Iran from having this superhighway to arm its forces in the Syrian forces or even Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. In terms of the threat that is made to Israel, that this base really did help in that cause. Now, Israel still has the ability, of course, to fire on those convoys of missiles that are coming into Syria, and they've shown that they would do that, and they do that. But nevertheless, it was very important to have the United States there in that base. And so now they're going to be leaving. Now they're going to be leaving. The U.S. forces there also offered a huge amount of protection to the Kurds that they were embedded with, because you have a lot of other nations, including Turkey and the Syrians themselves, that are very happy to take out Kurds and have often used the fight against Islamic State as a rationale or an excuse, I should say, to fight against the Kurds. But they really wouldn't do that while the United States was there with them, because if you go toe-to-toe with a U.S. ally, that's going to come back to bite you. But that cover, that protection now is gone for the Kurds. It is also interesting that this whole decision came just after a phone call with Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the president, the strongman, the dictator in Turkey. Apparently this was a very good conversation. Mr. Trump, again, this is just reports out of Turkey and also from the White House. We know that they did talk. But apparently Turkey said, we'll take care of ISIS. We'll take care of ISIS. And that will allow you to leave. We'll finish them off. You can get your troops, you can get your forces out of there. Now, this was really music to the ears of the president, of course, because this has been a long-term goal of his to bring the troops home. And, I mean, while a lot in his own government, including Defense Secretary Mattis, who resigned over the issue, as well as Brett McGurk, who resigned, I think, yesterday or today, over this as well, and he was a special envoy to this ISIL or the Islamic anti-Islamic State mission. So if he's the representative talking to the other nations in this group, and he didn't know we're leaving, that could obviously hurt his credibility, and so he's going as well. He was due to finish his post soon anyhow. Nevertheless, there've been a couple of people from the Trump administration that were surprised by this, were a lot. The president himself has pretty much held true to what he wanted to do. He actually stayed there for a little bit longer than he anticipated, him personally. I've got a statement here. This is the statement that he made back in April, just as U.S. forces fired on the Syrian regime, or at least the airport that the Syrian regime's planes took off from in some type of chemical weapons attack that they made. This was a U.S. retribution along with the French and the British. They both supported this. And this is what he said. I just went back and listened to it because he was pretty straight with the public. And he probably, those in his cabinet, the Secretary of State, Defense Secretary, Bolton as well, they should have all been aware that this is what the president was going to do. So they were on a time frame to figure out how to successfully wage a war in Syria and then leave, because the president was always going to leave. This is what he said back in April.
Increased engagement from our friends, including Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, and others, can ensure that Iran does not profit from the eradication of ISIS. America does not seek an indefinite presence in Syria under no circumstances. As other nations step up their contributions, we look forward to the day when we can bring our warriors home, and great warriors they are.
So he was pretty honest there. Under no circumstances are we in Syria for the long haul. This is just an Islamic State mission, and all you other nations can take care of it. If you don't want Iran to maximize their gains in the vacuum that the eradication of Islamic State produces, then do it yourself. We're leaving. This is not indefinite. And so kudos to Mr. Trump, I could say, I guess, to holding on to his word. But it's almost like from that statement 8 months ago till today, there was this void of communication that this was still the intent of the president, at least in terms of talking to the Secretary of State, talking to his foreign policy advisor, talking to his defense secretary, because all of them were laying out this plan, not just to destroy the Islamic State, but using this as an opportunity to push back against Iran. This, of course, pushing back against Iran seems to be one of the huge foreign policy decisions of the United States. And yet, he's decided to remove the very troops that were causing, I would say, the most damage to Iran's goals. These 2,000 soldiers, I mean, in terms of money, in terms of blood and treasure, not much at all. Almost nothing compared to the huge Iraq war investment in terms of money and lives lost. Afghanistan, just peacekeeping missions elsewhere in the world, in Africa, stationing troops on the Korean Peninsula. I mean, this was like the smallest amount of money that needed to be invested and lives that need to be invested to produce one of the greatest possible outcomes in terms of geopolitics. In terms of bang for your buck, this was probably the best mission ever, really. It's amazing. Not many lives lost, and accomplishing so many positive things for your allies in the region. But nevertheless, America is leaving. Now, what's interesting about that fact, that in terms of bang for your buck, this mission and inside Eastern Syria, it becomes now, if I can put it this way, an attractive option for one of the other nations that are a part of this Islamic anti-Islamic State fighting group that already have skin in the game, to just put up a little bit more money, to put up a few more ground troops, and you could replace the United States. Replace the United States in Eastern Syria. You could say to the United States, hey, we would like to take over your base in Al-Tanf. You could say to the Kurds, yes, we will fulfill your request that you've already put in for more troops. And you would satiate a lot of those people in Europe that are calling for Europe to have a greater presence in the world, not just with words, but with deeds. So we're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we'll look at what Europe is deciding right now in terms of its position in Syria.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm. Thank you for listening.
Hello and welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're talking about Mr. Trump's decision to pull out of Syria and the ramifications in terms of Bible prophecy and also the Europeans becoming more involved. And this giving them a real big doorway into the Middle East. And if you look at these two arenas, Afghanistan is the other one that looks like is the US is going to draw down its soldiers. I think it, I forget how many it has there, maybe 12 or 14,000, something like that, and they're going to reduce them by about half. Both those arenas is where are places where the second largest contingent to the forces there are European forces, and European forces that still believe in the mission, regardless of whether the United States is there or not. And so there's going to be some big decisions that are made right now in the halls of power in Europe, be it in Berlin for the mission in Afghanistan, where Germany has the second largest troop number in Afghanistan, that mission. Again, these are with the United States, missions with the United States. And then France in Syria, they have the largest number of troops on the ground there that are supporting the United States mission. And if they stay there and the United States is gone, then you're going to have European-led, de facto European-led missions in the Middle East. Now, I might be jumping the gun with Afghanistan to talk about that one just yet because the U.S. is still there. But with Syria and the U.S. departing, you're going to have France with 200 soldiers on the ground, with the Kurds right now putting in a request to France to up the number of soldiers to replace those of the United States, and potentially even thinking about them occupying the base in El Tanf. This base that it might be, it's probably going to be more expensive for the US to remove all of its, or ship everything home, and why not give it to an ally? Isn't this what Mr. Trump wanted? For others to pick up the slack, for others to take up the baton of the fight, and for the US to be able to go home and stop funding all these wars? Why not just hand over the supplies? Why not hand over control to an ally? That's what he has wanted to do. And so, I mean, we could see this going forward. I've got a couple of articles that I want to go through with you, just discussing how the Europeans are already thinking about this. And why is this important? This is important because the Bible does tell us definitely that Europe is going to get far more involved in the Middle East than they are right now. They are going to become a dominant player in the Middle East. And we have been watching for this to happen for so long in terms of Syria. In fact, going back to the very moment that the Syrian civil war began, our editor-in-chief, Gerald Flory, wrote a piece entitled, How the Syrian Crisis Will End. And in that piece, he talked about by the end of it, Iran's going to be out there, out of there, and Europe is going to replace Iran. German-led Europe is going to replace Iran as being the dominant outside force, dictating terms inside the nation, not just Syria, but also Lebanon as well. And it's very easy to see how both of those go together, given their geography. So we watch for Europe to get more involved in Syria. And as I've talked about on this program, this prophecy is so important, not just to show where we are in Bible prophecy, to show that these God's word is being fulfilled, but to also separate the message that you're hearing from us from anyone else. Because this is a huge call to say that Europe is going to replace Iran and Russia as the dominant force in Syria. That's kind of outlandish for most people to, and most educated people on the topic to hear. And yet, right now, with the US pulling out and the Europeans saying, well, we still think this mission needs to continue, you can see an easy way that the Europeans are going to grab a whole lot more power inside Syria. Just a couple of stories now to show you that events are already moving. Troops haven't left yet, and yet other nations are responding to the United States leaving. This is from yesterday or today. No, this is from today. Turkey sends more troops to Syrian Kurdish area as U.S. pulls out. And this is from the Times of Israel. Apparently there is about... 100 tanks, I think, or 100 vehicles going to the border right now from Turkey, pushing up to the areas that these Kurds control. The Kurds have said that, yeah, we'll take over the fight against Islamic State for you, Mr. Trump. Don't worry, you're my friend. That's quote, end quote. That's what Erdogan said. And for you, I'll do this. And so they're going to fight against the Islamic State, but they're also going to fight against the Kurds, as they've even stated. And so we can expect both of those things to happen, and Turkey's already moving forward with their troops. They did come out, I believe, on Friday, the Turks, and say that we're going to hold back for now against the Kurds. But don't worry, in the end, we'll go after them. Here's another report from Fox News today. It's entitled, Syria Sends Reinforcements East After Trump's Pullout Plan. So they're responding. Syrian troops have sent reinforcements to the eastern province of Deir el-Zour, close to the enclave controlled by the Islamic State group, and along the front with U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters, a war monitor program and pro-government pages on social media said Saturday. And so the Syrians, the Syrian regime's like, well, U.S. is leaving, so let's push up our troops onto that border where the Kurds are as well, because we don't want the Kurds to gain control neither. And then we just have another story, which I think is interesting, that the Iraqi prime minister, this is from Reuters yesterday, discussed U.S. Withdrawal from Syria with Mike Pompeo. So you have the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, that's talking to the prime minister of Iraq saying, don't worry, we're still committed to fighting Islamic State in Iraq. We still will be there. Don't worry. We're just really interesting. Just to think how much power the Secretary of State actually has, and how all allies everywhere in the world right now of the United States will not be able to take the words of anyone else but Mr. Trump with as being serious, because Mr. Trump could come out and say, no, I'm changing my mind, or no, I'm just going to withdraw forces. And so there was a number of pieces talking about how in many different arenas you're going to have allies of the United States that believe that the U.S. is so unreliable that they're going to try and hedge their bets elsewhere for protection. So there's just a couple of things a couple of items of how Turks, Syrians, and even Iraqis are worried. Well, Iraqis are worried what's going on. The Turks and the Syrians, they're moving their forces for the post-U.S. Syrian situation so that they can act as best they can to take over those areas that the U.S. controlled. Now just a little bit about the European response. This is an article that was in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. It's entitled, U.S.'s Mideast Pullout, Mattis Exit Alarm Europeans. Just a couple of quotes. European officials say they worry that Russia and Iran will fill the gap of diminishing U.S. presence and cite a growing estrangement in a transatlantic alliance that has helped sustain peace and prosperity for generations. Diplomats expressed a sense of betrayal because Europe faces much greater threats from terrorists, missiles, or refugees from these countries than the U.S. And that is true. I mean, Europe is on the front lines. That's probably why Mr. Trump is like, well, why don't you fight this war? Why are we doing it? But that's, I'm not going to get into that necessarily today. Just one more quote here. In Afghanistan, Europeans have sent thousands of troops alongside the United States forces as part of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization mission to support the fragile government and fight the Taliban. U.S. cuts there potentially put remaining forces at greater risk. Just as many European governments were adding troops under pressure from the United States. The Europeans are now likely to reassess their commitments. And so you have, again, Afghanistan is one and Syria is the other, where you have NATO basically missions where the leader of NATO, the United States, is leaving and European nations having to decide what to do. Now referring to Afghanistan, you've got, as I said before, German troops there make up the second largest number. There's 1,300 troops on the ground. What are you going to do with those? This is an article that was written in German that we have a translation of from Tagesspiegel, and this is from December 21st, so yesterday. And it's quoting the chairman of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Ischinger. That's a really important conference that takes place every year where Europeans get together and so do U.S. Officials get together and talk about the future security needs. This is one question that was asked by this newspaper of Wolfgang Ischinger. The question is this: what consequences does Trump's course have on Germany, especially since the U.S. troops in Afghanistan might also be reduced? Then he said this: these surprising turns are catastrophic for Germany's security and defense policy. Catastrophic. The German mission in Afghanistan always depended on the presence of U.S. troops. In the event of a catastrophe where we would not even be able to evacuate our own soldiers. And so, I mean, it's interesting. that you go into a mission. You go into a mission like this in Syria with a coalition or Afghanistan, and you each do different parts of the mission. You don't normally do it all. And in Germany, if you want to evacuate your soldiers, you're going to use the US's planes. Well, now the US looks like they're going to be leaving there in Afghanistan. So what are you going to do? You either have to get out yourself, or you have to increase or change your mission there. Increase your soldiers, increase your hardware, or change your mission. These are the questions that Europe is facing right now. This is another article I'd like to read. It's entitled "France's Existential Loneliness in Syria," and this was written today by Foreign Policy. A couple of quotes here. United States President Donald Trump's decision to withdraw all American ground troops from Syria, revealed by a tweet on Wednesday, was an early Christmas gift to authoritarian rulers and war criminals in Moscow, Tehran, and Damascus. Not only does Trump's unilateral move threaten to tie the hands of Washington's allies in the Middle East, particularly the Israelis and the Kurds, but it'll also tie the hands of America's Western allies who seek to continue their war against the Islamic State. And so it is interesting, just looking at everybody that rejoiced over this decision. Iranians said, great, they shouldn't have been there in the first place. Russia says, we welcome this decision because this is going to further the chances of peace. And the Syrian regime had similar statements. And so those that are rejoicing from the U.S. Removal from Syria are the enemies of the United States. So that should tell you something also. But this, I want to focus mainly on the European response. Again, the Europeans having to decide what to do with their forces. This article continues from Foreign Policy Today. In no European capital was the reaction to Trump's declaration swifter and sharper than Paris, which is the way that Macron seems to be these days, with his comments against Mr. Trump. Key government ministers, although this wasn't just him, key government ministers quickly pushed back against Trump's assertion that the American military mission in Syria, the defeat of the Islamic State, had been achieved. In a series of tweets, Florence Parly, the French army minister, allowed that Daesh, or Islamic State, had been seriously weakened by the Allied military intervention, but that, she continued, was not at all the same as enduring defeat. Quote, Daesh has not been struck from the map, nor for that matter has its roots. It is essential to militarily and decisively defeat the remaining pockets of this terrorist organization. And so they're talking about how the fight goes on. I mean, that is a smack to the face to everybody that you're fighting with, declaring victory against the Islamic State and the other nations that are still there saying, well, actually, it's not defeated. It's not defeated. We still have a purpose with our missions. And of course, they have more of a reason to be worried just because France especially has so many Islamic State fighters that do come back to France and commit terrorist attacks there. And this is what it says there in this article about that. Nevertheless, the withdrawal of American ground forces makes Macron the commander of what will become, by default, the largest Western force engaged in Syria. That's interesting. Mr. Trump's leaving. U.S. soldiers are leaving. And by default, France has the largest contingent there. We think around 200 soldiers. Quite suddenly, it says, this is a little bit further down, the internationalism of the coalition has shrunk, confronting France with geopolitical and existential challenges. In the wake of Trump's announcement, a former Belgian prime minister tweeted that it, quote, shows how wrong it is that we do not have a defense force able to help stabilize our immediate neighborhood, end quote. So you got a former Belgian leader saying, hey, this is bad, and it shows how it's such a travesty that we don't have a united European army to deal with these things. The article continues, this failure has not been for lack of trying in Paris. In early November, Macron called for the creation of a true European army. As we've talked about, as our editor-in-chief has given three programs about on the Key of David program, about his betrayal against the United States, and this call for a European army that is getting louder and louder. And in Syria, there's so much motivation for Europeans to get more involved. For the French, this article continues, this question has become an existential edge. Last week's attack in Strasbourg by the jihadi, gives the name of the jihadi, served as a reminder that France's war against the Islamic State was far from over. Since January 2014, it's estimated that some 1,700 French citizens have joined the Islamic State since 2014. So 4 years, 1,700 French citizens have fought with the Islamic State. 260 of those have returned to France. Then it continues, the situation poses a dilemma for French authorities. While most returning jihadis have been jailed, their prison stays are often little more than refresher courses in Islamist radicalism while they're there. Those who have been or will soon be freed, according to the newspaper Le Figaro, nearly 400 will be out of prison by the end of 2019. They're usually carded with something that allows them to be tracked. Nevertheless, this person that just committed this terrorist act in Strasbourg, they were meant to be tracked as well. And yet they were able to still do this attack. And so it is pretty important for France to still fight against the Islamic State. Just one more quote here from this article. During the battle for Raqqa, Kurdish forces, Raqqa is the capital of the Islamic State, or was, Kurdish forces captured several dozen French jihadis along with some 150 children. Among those captured and held are Thomas Barnoyne and Adrien Gehil, who have played key roles in the recent surge of French jihadism. As a result, the Kurds might well use them as means, if only by threatening to release them, to exercise diplomatic pressure on France to maintain its military engagement. So it's saying that the Kurds, if France, because the Kurds have requested, I think it was yesterday, requested that France increase the troop numbers to replace the United States. That's what the Kurds want. If France doesn't do that, it can open the spigot. They've said, I don't think we have enough people to control these prisons where we have a lot of Islamic State fighters. I don't know if we can fight against Turkey, fight against the Syrian regime, and still fight against the Islamic State. And where are those Islamic State soldiers going to go? A lot of them head back to Europe to perpetrate terrorist attacks there, especially if they see that the caliphate is over. That's what they were going to resort to. And then the article says, at the same time, however, the American military retreat leaves the way open for Turkey to move in into Turkish-held territories, thus placing French troops between a rock and a hard place. In short, Trump's holiday present for France was a pair of heart-pounding dilemmas. At both home and abroad, the government must find the political, material, and moral means to begin to fill the vacuum that America has just created in the war against the Islamic State. France needs to fill the vacuum in Syria. That's foreign policy. That's a really powerful statement, considering Bible prophecy, that talks about how Europe is going to be the dominant force in Syria. Then there was this one more piece I have here before we close. It's a piece that appeared in EU Observer. This is an opinion piece, and so it isn't written as fact. Yet it is interesting that you have the media in Europe calling for a more robust military presence inside Syria. This is the title is Europe Can Fill Security Gap Left by US in Syria. And this is towards the bottom. France is known to have already military presence in Rojava, and France has in the past undertaken effective unilateral airstrike campaigns against ISIS. So it's talking about this territory, Rojava. That's a territory in the northern part of Syria that the Kurds mainly controlled, that they wanted to make an independent state at the end of this. It's saying that France has already a military presence there, and so they could help. Then it says this, preserving a peaceful and secular Rojava by filling the security gap from the departure of U.S. forces would constitute a bold act in defense of humanity by European powers. They can fill the void now without any worries of it being a moral act. Of course, Europe likes to say that they're acting morally with a lot of their ventures, And so this would be another one that they could say, hey, we've got a moral right to be there. This might get actually a lot of public support. Protect the Kurds. Make sure they've got to say the Kurds have a safe territory to go. Prevent the flight of Kurdish citizens to Europe if they are attacked by the Turks. It's going to be another migrant wave. We need to stop it at the source. We need to make up for Angela Merkel's mistakes. And this next time round, let's stop it at the source, which was Syria. It continues, it will send a powerful and unequivocal signal to the US and the entire world that the freedom-loving people of Syria will not be abandoned and their fate is not for trade-off. Moreover, such a move would serve the interest of Europe in different ways. A military presence of France, supported by Germany, would avert an almost certain humanitarian disaster resulting from the scenarios discussed above. It'll also pave the way for the two European powers and, by extension, the EU to finally play a meaningful role in Syria. Finally, this is what we've been after, and this is what we've said for the past 7 years was going to happen. Now the doorway is open. Now there is a path to more European involvement in Syria. An initial Franco-German military presence could in the long term be transformed into an EU civilian mission, as it says. And then it says, last two paragraphs here, it is time for Europe to act decisively to protect the abandoned people of the Rojava region in Syria and prevent another humanitarian crisis. It's also time for President Emmanuel Macron and Chancellor Angela Merkel to walk the talk on the idea of a European army by sending their troops to Syria, filling the security gap the United States is leaving behind. Again, if you've listened to our message for any length of time, that's chilling. Chilling to think that United States is out and our forces are already there. We've either got to, basically, European nations are deciding right now, we've either got to get out or we've got to increase our troop numbers. There can be no other way around it. It's one or the other. And the French president came out and said, well, we're staying. So what's the next logical conclusion? With all the talk of Europe wanting a European army, you couldn't have a better mission for it than this one. You could send a couple thousand troops down there. You could use the facilities that the US created. You could insert yourself in the solution for Syria. You could make yourselves a more powerful player in determining the future of Syria, which means controlling the refugee or migrant flows into Europe. You could allow yourself to be a deal maker with Russia. You could even be put in a really strategic location to help cut off Iranian support to Syria, something that the Europeans have said that they wanted to do. You would even get the support of Israel to be there and acting in the way that that Israel thought that the United States should. And again, it's only 2,000 troops. Only 2,000 troops. But it could be the beginning of a larger European mission inside Syria. And that's what the Bible does say will happen. And especially in this area of eastern Syria as well, where you have the Kurds, where the United States forces currently are, this eastern part of Syria is going to be the dividing line between Iranian-backed nations and European-backed nations, European-supported nations. Right there in eastern Syria, right where the U.S. forces are right now and the Kurds, Iraq is going to follow Iran. They're already in Iran's back pocket. That's clear for any observer. But we are going to see a change. Syria is going to come out of Iranian control. And it's going to happen right there in eastern Syria, right there where the U.S. forces are. And they're going to support, Syria's going to be cut off from Iran and Iraq. And so it makes sense that that's where European forces will come first, at least in terms of Bible prophecy. And this is why we're talking about all this. We don't just have a fascination with geopolitics and power plays in the world. No, we're watching this because there's a Bible prophecy that's about to be fulfilled in Syria, in Eastern Syria specifically. And we see news events and reporting coming out of Syria and coming out of Europe and the United States that show a path forward for that prophecy to be fulfilled. And again, this is, I mean, in some ways, it's absolutely horrible considering the human suffering of the Syrian civil war that it's gone on for 7 years. But at the same time, it has given 7 years of us being able to say how it's going to end. And defy every other news pundit out there, just defy every other so-called prophecy website or voice out there and tell you exactly what's going to happen, that Europe is going to take over Syria. And now with the United States withdrawal, we see how this is possible. Please do go back and read our editor-in-chief's article written in 2012, How the Syrian Crisis Will End, a bold forecast that we still hold true to this day, that we still say is going to happen to this day. And with events of Mr. Trump, the U.S. forces pulling out, it just became a whole lot more closer to taking place. Thank you very much for joining us today. If you'd like to send some feedback, please do email us. You can email letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. And I'll be leaving a link to that article, How the Syrian Crisis Will End, in the show notes of today's program. Thanks again for listening.